you're listening to the Creepcast on DownrightCreepy.com. Now, here's your creepy host.
Hey everyone, Casey Canton here, and you're listening to the Creepcast once again on Downright Creepy. I'm joined by Adam Roberts, and today we're traveling to space and back while trying to solve a secret Russian cover-up that takes place in IFC's Sputnik. So, before we go to Russia, it's time to do a creepy check, see how we're doing today. And Adam, how are you doing?
Well, I'm feeling quite like a killer clown from outer space. Which is just pure creepiness. I actually hate that movie, but I do feel like I look like one of those creepy-ass mother truckers today.
Which one?
I don't know. The one that has...
I don't know either.
The tall, skinny, weird one. No, the in-between one. The in-between one has, like, I believe he kind of has, like, sad ears. It's the only reason that I can remember him. He's got, like, red hair and sad ears. Well, I hate that movie. Do you like that movie?
We talked about it briefly when we brought up the Clown Motel in the last episode. I like it. It's kind of kitschy. I mean, I'm not going to sit down and make a night of it. Like, I will watch it if someone else brings it up or wants to. But I think I've watched it twice ever. And one time was in theaters, one time was at home. It's fine. I mean, it's just a fun movie. I think the clowns are creepy and fun looking. I mean, they're different from what we're used to seeing.
It just makes me feel uncomfortable. So that's kind of how I feel today. I feel uncomfortable.
the cotton candy cobwebs are pretty fun in that. Yeah, I was likening like a scale of Alien to 2001 Space Oddity. I'm somewhere right now at the Thing level of creepiness today because I feel, you know, isolated, just completely alone in the world. I don't know if the pit in my stomach, if that's like an alien using my body as a host or if it's just an ulcer. So that's, I think, where I am. I'm somewhere in the Thing territory today for creep factor.
Okay.
God, I'm so glad. It's like a therapeutic thing every episode when we figure out where we are on that level. So,
yeah,
it's never good. No, it's never good.
Not ever a good thing. But you know, at least we know we're like shells of humans and not fully humans.
We know where we stand.
Yeah.
As always, you can hashtag us Ask a Creep on Twitter at Downright Creepy. If you hit us up with something that is creepy, but you know, don't stalk us. We'll talk about it on the show. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Downright Creepy. Okay. That's out of the way. Let's move on to today's topic, which is aliens and space with a side of Russian, a slice of Russian. Mm-hmm. So the film we're reviewing today is Sputnik. And it tells the story of a lone survivor from a spaceship incident who did not return alone. So I thought, based on that topic, why not discuss the lost female Russian cosmonaut from the 1960s, before we get into this review. Now, we talked about it a little bit back and forth, getting ready for the show. Had you heard of this before?
Yes.
Some extent of it, at least, probably. Maybe not the exact thing that we're covering.
Yeah, but not the exact thing.
But yeah, this lost Russian cosmonaut, or sometimes it's referred to as the Phantom Cosmonaut, I think is fascinating. If you ever look up strange sounds from radio stations or number stations or just strange sounds on the internet, sometimes you can find YouTube channels that are like top 10 creepy things. This is usually always in those lists. But let's back up just a second, because the Sputnik, which is what this is about, this review, it was sent out and it basically just was sent into space with a radio signal and had a little beeping noise on it. And that's really all it did. And the U.S. later did that with Explorer 1, kind of accomplished the same thing. And this was part of that space race and around the Cold War era. It fueled everyone's interest about space. Then it kind of kind of went into to radio and number stations of people trying to pick up signals from space and the satellites to see if they could hear things. And one group of brothers did just that in the most terrifying way possible. I'm not going to even try and pronounce their names, but these two Italian brothers were screwing around and they ended up finding several transmissions from these satellites in space, but nothing that was ever concerning, right? Mm-hmm. Until they found the distressed signal of a Russian cosmonaut that possibly proves people were actually being launched into space long before the first female Russian was sent there. That's where we get the lost cosmonauts.
I mean, anytime I think there's Italians and Russians involved, I think it's always going to be a fascinating turn of events that kind of play out. I think you shared the clip with me. I listened to it and I was like, well, there's no, they're speaking a different language, Tim. And then you told me to read the
transcript of it.
Yeah. And then it was just kind of horrifying to listen to. Cause you're like, well, this is clearly, you know, oftentimes I ask myself, like, where are all the, like, how did somebody just make beer, right? Like, how many times did they fail? How many different people were making it? Certainly, it took a long time to get to this time. And that goes for, like, everything. Like, we never really see or hear about the process of, like a computer monitor being developed. Like, we don't, there's not, like, I'm sure some things have, like, development, but we rarely see, like,
inside, beta, like, versions.
Yeah, well, we rarely beta see version. It throughout our whole history. And certainly, you're like, well, we didn't just go to space and know you had to wear a helmet. Like, so I'm certain, like, somebody sent somebody up there and they just exploded, right? Or they tried to go outside. Or I mean sure, there's, like, there was some level of, like, science, but also the first time we went up there, we didn't really know anything. I mean, we certainly killed a lot of animals, and then to hear this, you're basically hearing, like, what happens when people try to come back home. And
when they re-enter the Earth's atmosphere. Should we pause a second and take a listen to that real quick for listeners? Okay. So there it is. Now you can read along. There's a transcript on it that translates everything that's being said there. And she's obviously in distress. She's worried about re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. She's getting very hot, which we assume she eventually just combusted, right? Or floated out into space. So pretty terrifying when you start thinking about that. I liken it to, you know, we'll never experience that, hopefully. But if you're out in just the open water of the ocean, it would have to feel like you're like that, floating, maybe getting cold if you're not in reentry and you're floating zero gravity. But if you're coming into reentry, you're basically just going to burn alive. And knowing that that's going to happen and slowly kind of feeling it, I cannot imagine what that was like. And if you want to watch the clip, I'll have it here in the show notes too, so you can see the transcript.
Yeah, it's pretty harrowing, I think. But but it was also fascinating that, like, of course they haven't acknowledged that it's real, but
right.
Oh boy.
But there has been, not necessarily with a specific clip, but to your point about, like, you know, everything's in beta. We don't ever know. We don't get anything right the first try. And then to try and do something like this right on the first try seems like mind boggling. And they have proven to some extent there was other people, you know, that got sent up there. The government never agreed that it actually happened. And to your point, they did send up a dog. It was pretty famous. I can't think of the name right now, but that's the most notable thing where they actually said, you know, we've sent up a dog. So it wasn't just people, but animals when they were trying to figure out who was going to win the space race. So check it out. Let us know what you guys think, if you've heard of it, if not, or if you've got anything else you want to share with us that's interesting.
The dog revolving this Laika.
Yeah. I read some sort of like explained video prepping for this a little bit, and I recalled the dog, but could not remember the name. So thank you for that. But yeah, let us know if you find anything else interesting around the space race or the Cold War, because that honestly is what we're about to talk about here with IFC's Sputnik. So let's go ahead and move on to our review. And this is brought to us by a first-time director. We've had two episodes with first-time directors on them. Interesting. Igor Abraminko. And this is his first feature film. We have really three main characters in this. Maybe you could even argue like four, if you don't count the alien that is in it. And we are going to spoil this. So please, if you haven't watched it, hit pause. Go watch it. Go check it out at Screenland if you're in Kansas City, or find it on VOD somewhere. But this movie revolves around a lone survivor that was in a spaceship accident. When he comes back home, he finds out that something has basically taken him over and is hidden inside of his body. And we get to explore what it is, how it's adapting to Earth, and we see it through the eyes of the scientists that are doing it. So let's get some first impressions on this. I'd like to start personally with the director and the cast. What do you think?
Well,
what are your thoughts?
Well, I think the cast is incredible. I didn't really know what to expect from this film. I was just like, oh, Sputnik. It's like I had heard it compared to like Alien. And I guess like that's a pretty good comparison. I think everyone in this is tremendous. I think the director handles everything very well. There's a couple tiny nitpicky things that we'll eventually get to. But yeah. I mean, I was... You know, I think a good testament of a foreign film is you don't really realize you're reading subtitles. And this one kind of absorbed me completely. So I think the director fully did his job, and so did the cast. I think everyone was great here.
I agree. I think he knocked it out of the park. He only had, I think, two shorts under his belt before this. So not really a ton of practical experience coming into it, and man, it looked great. The actors just kind of hit all their beats on their performances. You cared about the characters as you went through, like every one, even though there's only four, but you get pretty intimate with them, details of their lives. And yeah, I thought they did an amazing job. And of course, with this being fully like a Russian film, right? You just don't know, like you said, what you're going to get, or you don't know, you're not familiar with the actors, right? Like, it's one thing to kind of have some no-name actors or rising names when you see something in America, but when it's a foreign film, a lot of times it's just like, well, they could be really well established, right?
Yeah.
And they are. I mean, I've looked at their internet movie database profiles, looked at some of their stuff. I'm like, okay, they've done tons of stuff. It's just, we may not know it. So, it's no surprise in that sense that they're seasoned actors, and they do a fantastic job. I really enjoyed it. And to your point, you do kind of forget, you know, that you're watching a foreign film at some point, because you just get immersed into the story.
Yeah. The next thing I think we should bring up is just how good the effects in this are.
Yeah.
I was trying to find a conversion to see, like, looks like it was like a $2.5 million movie, which isn't a ton.
No,
especially when you see this movie open, you're like, shit, they're in space in a spaceship and it looks great. And the alien effects here are quite good. There's a decent amount of gore. But the aliens in this quite a bit and it looks great.
Yeah.
And I mean, the sets are huge. You're in a military base.
And I would also say with the alien, if you were to liken it to, say, Prometheus or something Ridley Scott did.
Yeah.
And you see kind of those smaller aliens, they come off really CGI, like, yeah, surprisingly. And that's a huge budget, right? Compared to this. And when you see this alien, in my opinion, you know, we're used to, you know, standard alien, right? Like, what do we think of? It's a gray with an egg-shaped head and big, mm-hmm, black eyes type of thing. And that's evolved throughout film over the years in different interpretations. But to me, this almost feels like, yeah, that is what I would expect some sort of alien life form to look like, a little more like less, more exoskeleton ish. Like, it needs something, to support itself in a harsh environment. And when you put yourself inside of a human as a host, which is the case in this, with our hero, like cosmonaut, that helps protect them from the outside world in case they can't adapt to it. But in this case, we see throughout the alien is adapting. And the character design of it kind of, to me, reminded me of a cobra. But if it had slimy legs, front arms dragging itself around, and it looked fantastic. A lot of times the CGI really didn't come across as CGI. I mean, for the most part, especially interesting and creepy when you see it in the FLIR, the infrared goggles.
Yeah, I think the what struck me is, at first, I mean, we see this thing kind of grow and transform throughout the movie. And it actually, you know, it's like human-esque. And I think what is in Jurassic Park, what are those little guys that get they get Newman whenever he crashes. They like look real cute and then like,
I can't remember what it is.
But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it kind of has that level of like kind of creepiness to its face. But just how it moves and how it comes out is just like kind of slug like and just like, I don't know. It's pretty disgusting. But when it stands on its 2 feet, that I hate it. It is snake like. You're right. Like how it, like a cobra, like, can kind of lift itself up and just kind of grow in height and puff its chest out a little bit. But it also has this like this almost spider like quality to its face, with like
its eyes.
10,000 eyes almost. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of, I feel like it tricks you and kind of pulls you in thinking it's weak because it's dragging itself. And then all of a sudden it can stand up and it's incredibly fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really great take, on an alien and how they approached it. And we've kind of talked about it just now. And I had a thought when I was watching it, because it is during the Cold War. Maybe it's obviously a little later than what this time frame would be for Stranger Things. But with Russians trying to weaponize an alien, mm-hmm, it started to kind of put me in that realm a little bit and be like, oh, okay, this is like a serious, more serious take, on that type of story. But yeah, it kind of harkened back to Stranger Things for that for me. And I did think that it was interesting, since we're on the alien and we're kind of talking through some of the traits of it, that it's Tatiana, which is our female lead, who's fantastic, mm-hmm, is a scientist trying to figure out, like, all right, what makes this alien tick? Essentially, the government's trying to use her as a brain to weaponize this thing and control it from coming out of the cosmonaut's body and in and out of the host, and potentially like separating it and then using it as a weapon. So I guess we should bring that up first. But as she's doing studies on it, there is a little toy that's there that makes noise. And at the time, they don't think the alien can hear, but she's playing with it, and slowly the alien adapts to sound and can hear things and understand it. But it sees this toy as kind of innocence of the cosmonaut's orphan son, because it belonged to him, apparently, or he thinks it did at least. And so there's an interesting kind of touchy moment that a little bit of the Cosmonaut's feelings come through the alien as he grips it and kind of coddles it and holds it close. But when I looked at that toy, I was like, that looks like a Russian nesting doll, like the visual that you would see on those. And then it kind of clicked like, oh, Russian nesting doll, having this alien being inside of host body. It kind of came together for me. And I almost wondered if there wasn't some sort of inspiration behind that simple thing of like looking over at your desk, seeing a nesting doll and saying, what if this inspired an alien host?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It is interesting because the alien itself quickly identifies there's two cosmonauts coming into the atmosphere, and it knows which one is a better host for it. I think that was a cool, like, it's just so smart already. Also, he mentions seeing, like he was describing it, he mentioned seeing a whale, and something huge presumably hits the ship, and then we're given just this little alien that crawls inside of him, and we're not really sure. I guess it survives coming into the atmosphere, and then when they get out, it gets inside of them and attacks them. But if that's the case, then it's a little bit of a Twilight Zone. Like, there's something on the wing, and it rides, it rides itself into the atmosphere and finds the best host between the two men. But what's interesting is that he says, I saw a whale in the sky. And is this just like a piece of a larger, you know, entity? Like, is this like, you know, in a weird way, is this like a sperm or something? And it's literally growing and residing inside of him.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, because they specifically say during the studies, they're like, well, we're at the secret base. I forget exactly where they were at. And we're doing the testing here because we can't take it back to Moscow where you know, that government headquarters is, because we don't know what this thing is going to do. Is it going to grow? Is it going to get bigger? Is it going to grow larger than us? Can we control it? So that's why we're in this secret base to begin with. That and the fact that they're hiding, the astronauts didn't really have any issues in terms of readapting to the Earth's atmosphere when they came back. It's because they got fucking alien inside of them. So
yeah,
that's a good point though, is that, you know, it grew inside of them. Like, how was it the full size when it went in? I don't know.
Yeah.
Did it grow when it was in there? Incubation or
that is the question, I guess, is like, we're given just enough of this alien to make it interesting. But yeah, like that they're like connected, and like that it has like, you know, almost flirts with this a similar like makeup of the aliens in Independence Day, where they can like read their minds and like kind of use them as a puppet. But in this instance, they're like sharing a vessel and like live, like cannot live without one another. So like once that marriage happens, it can't be broke, or they'll both die. But it kind of has that Independence Day flavor, even in like kind of the character design. It reminded me a little bit of that Independence, like kind of translucent alien.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it's funny you bring all that up, because I was going to say, where have we seen maybe something that's been similar like this in other films, where we've had, you know, the host take over a body, or at least have this exoskeleton, because we've seen it more and more predominant, the exoskeleton kind of storyline in more modern sci-fi films.
Yeah.
So that's a good callback on the Independence Day and War of the Worlds. Didn't they have exoskeletons, if I recall? Gosh, I think some might have.
I can't remember.
Boy, I can't remember, but I sure feel like the newer one did. But in general, it's super interesting, because who's to say if this thing would, because it got out a couple times. And just during reentry, like, were there more that came in? Yeah. You know, was there more than one inside if it wasn't that size when it came in? Because it doesn't affect the host when it's in, coming in and out of the body around like 3 a.m., which is weird. And at first I thought maybe it's a nocturnal thing, but it wasn't. It just happened to be when it came out to feed, which we haven't got into that yet. We should probably get into that in a minute. But yeah, so I just think that, as much as the characters themselves, you know, the scientist, the general, the astronaut, and how interesting they are, we really spent a bulk of this review so far discussing the alien.
Yeah.
But we've got so much more with these interesting characters, I feel like.
Well, I think the alien is, you know, kind of pretty similarly to the smart horror films we've seen as of late, Relic being one off the top of my head. The alien here is used very metaphorically, I think, to great effect. You know, like this thing is living inside of this man's body and it only comes out to feed essentially 1 hour a day, and they can't be removed from one another. And, you know, they all but tell you that this is a man suffering from severe PTSD. And you know, the alien is quite representative of that, like in the sense that it's just this being that acts out, right? It's his Hulk in a way. But we've never really seen that. And it is quite the Hulk, you know, he can't really control it. Like he tries to calm down and like, you know, I mean, it is very much, you know, Hunchback of Notre Dame and the Incredible Hulk to more modern, just a classic monster movie sense. But in this instance, I mean, we're told in the first 20 minutes that, well, this guy clearly has PTSD, and they're all like, yeah, but is it? And it's like, yeah, it is PTSD. And this, you know, the monster is, you know, whatever his trauma is that he carries really with control. Him. Yeah, he carries with him forever.
Yeah, I think that was the interesting thing, that yes, we have a monster movie essentially at the core, with the alien, but it is about personal trauma too. You see that even the general is kind of struggling at times with what he's doing, saying that I know what I'm doing, I'll get court-martialed for. And then Tatiana, the scientist that's there to help them, she doesn't really want to be there, but she decides to stay to see where it goes. So they're all kind of struggling with something. And we see that kind of play out even more so with the astronaut than anyone else, because of some details we'll get into here in a minute. But I thought it was interesting that we really had multiple villains in this. You have the general, you have the alien, you don't really know what to think about the cosmonaut at the very beginning. Like, is he a dick? Is he someone that we should like as a hero because he keeps flaunting that status? Mm-hmm. And Tatiana is the only one that you really are like, okay, she seems like the level-headed one here. She's super smart. She's empowered, strong female lead, and you know, arguably the best character of the film. But yeah, we do have kind of a struggle almost of like, who do you trust and who is the villain? You know, when do you root for the alien? Because I found myself doing that at times, right. Which I think is really interesting. How often does that happen, right? Like, how often do we root for an alien in these types of movies? Not that often. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just think there's a lot going on from a character standpoint, dealing with, like you said, the metaphorical trauma and then the real life trauma, which brings me to the orphan. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So this is the part of the movie that I don't necessarily think should have stayed in this movie, and that I have
interesting.
I have like some issues with the orphan and like this man who couldn't take care of his kid. It's just the part that it feels kind of a little redundant, and I just, you know, his backstory, it could have even been mentioned in his backstory. I just didn't necessarily need to see so much of it to really, I don't know. I just didn't need it for his character arc, honestly. And the last 3 or 4 minutes of this movie, actually, you know, you kind of see coming, and I thought we were going to get this one line. And if we got this line of dialogue, I was going to literally hang up the phone in this movie because I would have been frustrated beyond belief. But yeah, I mean, did it work for you? Did the orphan story work for you?
Yeah. So it worked for me because
maybe I just interpret it wrong. Sell me on it. Give it to
me. I'll say this. I do agree with you in terms of they didn't need to necessarily interject those scenes, mm-hmm. Of the orphan kind of throughout. I think it would have been way better if we just saw it at the end. Cause then we kind of hear about this kid. We don't know if he's real or she's real. Or if he's just kind of making it up, or, you know, did something happen? I don't know. It's more mysterious to not have seen it and just heard about it and then have it turn at the end and be like, oh, that was real the whole time. Like, maybe it's a figment of his imagination that he wanted kids, yeah. couldn't have them. But yeah, you're right. He gave up his career, or gave up the kid for his career. And now it's the kid is seven almost. So it's been a long time. He's had plenty of time to go back, you would think, and mend that bridge. But the one thing I liked about that storyline in general is that it gave him humanity when he was coming off as a dick for some of the earlier part of the movie. Yeah. Not overtly, not like heavily, but someone that you didn't like as much, you started to feel some more sympathy, not That's only true. For the fact he's going through PSD and he's got this horrible condition that he's really never going to get out of. And they're trying to weaponize essentially this alien host in his body, which at all cost, right? Like, they don't care what he actually does. He's touted as a hero, but they could kill him and no one would know the truth. So it gave you a little bit of humanity to grab onto and be like, okay, I care about this guy more now. Because he realizes he made a mistake. He wants to see his child, and he may never get a chance to. So that's why I liked it being interjected into the story. I do agree with you. We didn't need to see the scenes being like, see, he's got a kid. We're proving it.
Yeah, I just didn't. I think I'm okay with like the dialogue, the character trait of the child. I just, sure. Those scenes were like, just kind of like fumbled a little bit for me. Like, the movie was like picking up pace and we cut over to it. And it's like, I really didn't need to see it. I certainly didn't need to see it wrap up in the end. I all but thought that Tatiana was going to like get the kid and then be like, well, there's also, okay, there's a weird moment in that last 3 minutes that I didn't understand at all. Like
in the final kid. Scene, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
With the kid. Yeah. With the kid, which maybe you're going to have to help me with, because I should have rewatched it twice, but I didn't. But I all but thought she was going to say, like, your dad was a hero, because it was all building up to that moment of, like, the main cosmonaut, like, finally, like, realizing, how to, you know, this whole time he was just, like, branded a hero, and what it actually took to become, I think, more a hero in the correct sense, because she chastised him for like, oh, you go into space, come back, you're not a hero. But the you know, in this instance, he like basically sacrificed himself to save somebody else, and like, I think wants to do the right thing with his kid, and like basically earns the title. And I thought that was gonna be said, and I was like, fuck this movie if they say that line at the end. But what happens with the kid though is interesting, because correct me if I'm wrong. The kid says that they're Tatiana.
Yeah. Says her name is Tanya.
Tanya.
Yeah. So, okay. Tatiana, Tanya. Yeah. Yeah. Which I didn't really understand that. Did you?
And I mean, maybe it's just talking about, I don't know, like the identification.
It did confuse me.
Gender in this, but like, it was such a weird thing. It happened so late and there's no other context in the whole movie for it. That it's just like, I mean, we every time we see the boy, like, he's just referenced as the boy, like by the like clinical worker there, the hospital worker, just like, boy, why boy, you're gonna kill yourself, boy. Like, they make it a point to say boy every time.
Well, they also, I mean, refer to him that his own dad, right? Like,
right,
says I have a son. I'm pretty sure he mentions that specifically. And yeah, we got that turn all of a sudden at the end where she is leaving the orphanage and says, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl, I'm Tanya, or something to that effect. And it like threw me for a loop, because I'm like, okay, the whole boy girl thing, you would have thought the caregivers would know, first of all, because they're taking care of this child from birth. Yeah, right.
We assume hopefully they looked under the hood at least once,
right, and like changed a diaper or something, because she's only seven almost, and so we just assume that she's been in there for most of her life. Right. So yeah, I thought that was weird, and I don't know what the resolution is for it, or if there's some hidden meaning to it, because it certainly wasn't like Tatiana and the cosmonaut were together at any point, and that was her kid legitimately. So yeah, I don't know what it was, but to your point, yeah, if they would have said that line at the end, like, your dad was a hero, I wouldn't have minded it, but at that point, it would have been, like, too neat.
Yeah.
Too neat and buttoned up a little bit. I thought it was, you know, a nice, like, heartfelt scene, but I also could have seen it, you know, just cutting out when we see the government vehicles coming in the rural area in the final scene, which we'll final battle scene, which we'll talk about here in a second. I could have just seen it in there and been fine, kind of floated out into space and just ended the movie.
Yeah. So I wish it would have gone that route. It would have been a little cleaner.
Yeah. I didn't mind it, but yeah, to your point, unwarranted for the most part. I liked having the scene at the end if they wouldn't have put the other ones in prior to that. And it just had a little bit of a disconnect there, but let's talk about this battle scene though, and kind of the action in the last, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. I feel like we get to see, you know, we've known this alien's been coming out and feeding, and Tatiana's figured out that, oh no, there's like, what are you eating? What are you feeding him? And at this point, we've just been like, oh, the government's saying it's just whatever the cosmonaut eats, right? And she's not buying that. She's smarter than that. So she ends up finding out they're feeding it people, which yeah. I actually didn't see coming. Did you? Did you see that coming?
I had assumed when they're like, oh, it eats what he eats. I'm like, really? Like that line just, it was just breezed over so quickly. I think the answer, maybe it was how I portrayed that answer. The other scientist.
I just assume, like, of course this alien loves ho-hos. That's right. I mean, who doesn't love ho-hos?
Exactly.
I don't care what planet you're from. And so it just caught me off guard when it was like, oh, he's feeding on people. And it's horrific, right? Like they're tearing him apart. Mm-hmm. But then we find out why, and it's because the alien specifically craves cortisol, the chemical released in the brain when fear happens, and so it wants you. They want the people being eaten to see the alien coming for them to produce that endorphin or chemical in the brain, so that it feeds on it. Which I thought was a super interesting detail to that. You know, it wasn't just it's eating human flesh. It's a meat eater, cannibal, carnivorous. It was cortisol specifically. And so it's, you know, taking the brain, taking the head off and just pops it off and rips it off violently. But the nice fear. Twist. Yeah. The nice twist was kind of that John Doe 7 twist, right? Like, why are they feeding them these people? It's because they're pedophile, they're murderers, they're rapists. So then you're kind of like, oh shit. All right. I mean, I kind of don't care. Kind of don't care that they're getting eaten, to be honest. Was that like a big enough twist for you? Even if you knew, like, if you knew they were getting fed, but then you get the cortisol thing, you get the pedophile thing, and it made it a little bit better, I think. It turned it up a little bit.
Yeah, the cortisol thing was pretty neat. I mean, it's literally eating fear, which is very Pennywise, you know? Down to, like, this thing from outer space that just, like, literally eats fear. I like that touch to it. I think it was interesting. I guess that's like goes back to his PTSD. It's like this thing feeds on fear, which I guess, like, you know, that's kind of ties into how it could overtake this man's life, like this his own fear and you know, like being this monster to everybody else when all he was told he was going to be was this hero, which maybe he's finding out he was not.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know why I didn't connect the dots of the PTSD and it literally kind of identifying him as someone that is vulnerable that I can enter. I don't know why I didn't put those two pieces together, but yeah, that's a great point. And so we kind of progress into this final battle action scene, if you will, of the movie, the kind of first one that we really get where everyone's involved and a chase happens and they're trying to, Tatiana believes she's figured out a way to separate the two so that the cosmonaut can now live his life, go see his child, get away from this, and the government can still keep this alien life form to weaponize. But It turns out she's not quite right. And when we go on this chase, I don't know if you want to kind of comment on the final kind of moments of that or not, but I thought it was done wonderfully.
Yeah, no, I think it all plays out about how I expected once we get onto the road, once the chase happens. You know, the big military bad guy, he's good. But honestly, like, as I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, this guy is actually not that bad of a bad guy. Like, he's just he plays it so.
He's very Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah, he's very cool about it. Like he seems like he's being honest. Of course, like he's not. But like for most of the movie, I'm just like, this guy's like shockingly like pretty cool and chill and like taking the right side of things. And I don't know, like I was okay. I didn't really find him. I knew he was supposed to be the villain, but I never really like thought he was. And then he does the last like 20 minutes. He does take that harder villainish approach.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it. Kind of what we touched on a little bit earlier was you don't know who's good and who's bad. You just assume the roles, right? Like you assume the scientist is probably going to be good when she comes in. You assume the government officials are not. Right. And then you assume that the astronaut, if he's this hero, that he's going to be a good guy as well. What I didn't expect, as I mentioned before, was the alien and rooting for it, which I did in the final scene. Because Tatiana tries to actually stop the alien from eating people because she's against that, right? Like, you know, but in doing so, she actually seems to potentially kind of calm it and calm the nerves of it because she's not fearful of it and it notices that. But one of the idiot prisoners that's going to get fed to him distracts it and then it gets riled up again. And before you know it, all hell breaks loose. She gets shot. And then as we see in the final few minutes before we get to the orphanage scene, the standoff, the government does find where they're at, has captured the alien back into a cage. And we now have a standoff with the cosmonaut and Tatiana as she finds out while driving, they cannot be separated.
Right. Which wasn't too much of a surprise.
Yeah, I kind of figured they couldn't, but.
But I did like it, and I like when, you know, it's kind of that classic like scene in superhero movies where like the hero is down and out, and then like it's like you know, like classically done like Star Wars, where like just reaching for the lightsaber, and then, you know, if force pulls into his hand, and he turns it on and swipes back at the bad guy. You know, this one, like the bad guys have all but won, and then this creature that we think is either dead or dying, like reanimates enough to get power, to fight one last fight.
And, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I think, it's a cool little moment.
The thing that I liked most about that kind of rural desert standoff scene that we had is that there's a lot of tension that's built up at that point. You know, we've had tense moments before, but this is kind of the penultimate because we've got our main characters involved in danger at this point. All of them are kind of up for grabs. You've got the cosmonaut potentially dying. Mm-hmm. The alien might be dead. We don't know yet, or at least dying, since because it's reciprocal feelings. The cosmonaut at this point gives no shits about Tatiana, even though he's kind of kept her around more as a pawn, I feel like, to weaponize the alien. And then Tatiana cares about the astronaut. So we've kind of got this ultimate standoff of like, someone's not going to make it out of here. And it does play out, I guess, as you would expect. But even though it did, when the alien kind of regenerates and comes back to life, because it regenerates fast. Yeah. So even though it was sitting there dying, it does have that moment. At least that piece kind of plays off the little kind of cliche, right? Of like, oh, one last moment to come back to life and save the day. It does regenerate. So at least there's some sort of logic in it. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I liked was, I believe I was like, fuck yeah. Like I actually said it when the alien just destroyed all the soldiers. Like,
oh yeah.
That's the moment where I was mentioning earlier, where I was rooting for the alien at that point, which I hadn't fully done yet. And it became kind of the good guy in a sense. So yeah, I thought the last scene was actually really exciting, like intriguing, and the whole hour and a half of kind of relationship building between these characters and deceitfulness and some of them being coming out and telling the truth to try and get what they want. It kind of paid off in that moment, the culmination of it. And it became more impactful because we had spent some time with these characters and this was the final showdown.
I think everything you said is pretty much perfect. Like, I think those moments of finally seeing this beast unleashed, the more I think about it, the more this is just, something like Hulk or Hunchback, where it's just all building up to this thing you can't control, being released into the wild and kind of going crazy. And so those moments are totally earned.
I love the Hulk analogy. I would have never even thought about that, but it's perfect. Like, yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, it was great.
So let's give our kind of final thoughts on this. Like, I think we generally both like the movie. I actually really love the movie. I think it's a shame that probably more people aren't going to experience this in theaters together. Because I really think it is a movie that's cool to see as a group, as you have some of those kind of ebbs and flows and the moments when you see the alien for the first time and the attack and how vicious that can be, and probably experiencing that collective gasp with an audience would be great. Mm-hmm. So that sucks. It's not going to get more respect that it deserves. And the fact that it's a foreign film, it's also got that barrier to break through, right? So not only is it not going to get the respect it deserves probably in theaters because of COVID, but it was also going to have trouble breaking through a little bit from the foreign film perspective. So for those of you, those theaters that can show it, like Screenland, I hope people can support it if they feel comfortable. And if not, I really hope they at least get to see it on VOD because it deserves it.
Yeah, definitely. If you can see it in theaters, absolutely do so. It's made to be seen in theaters.
And the last couple of the first few films here we are reviewing on Creepcast are ironically IFC films. So
yeah,
IFC Midnight and IFC Films, really, really great stuff for this. So what is your final rating on this out of 100?
This movie's pretty great. I would put it like 85%.
Yeah, super solid. I had a slight uptick at 90. I think that actually probably makes sense with what we kind of critiqued it. You know, you had a couple points off here and there for things, and I think I like those things that you mentioned a little bit better, so I think that makes sense. 85 and 90, pretty solid. Internet Movie Database, not a lot of reviews in yet. 6 out of 10, so not great for that, but I also think it's a lack of reviews because Rotten Tomatoes has nothing yet, which is shocking to me.
Yeah,
don't you think that's weird?
I think this movie is going to be very well received. I think the
comparison to
Alien are great. I think it's smart, good sci-fi. I think it'll be up where we're putting it in the 85 to 90 range.
Yeah, I'm just shocked there's not any on the tomato meter yet, with it being, it comes out this weekend coming up. Yeah. All right. Well, there you have it. That's Sputnik from IFC Films. Check that out. Go back and look at the Lost Cosmonaut, Phantom Cosmonaut recordings with the link we have, and read that transcript. It's pretty creepy. And as always, don't forget to ask a creep, hashtag ask a creep on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. Hit us up or you can just hit Adam and I up. So, all right. I think that's all we got for this week. And I think we're going to come back with another episode of Cursed Films from Shudder. You looking forward to that?
I am looking forward to that.
A lot to digest in that. Lots of films to talk about. And one in particular that we can talk about during that episode I was not aware of. So, all right. Until next time, Adam. Stay creepy, I guess.
I will. I'm going put my clown makeup back on.
I'm going to go rub some mayonnaise on me for my cheese sandwich. So. All right. Bye-bye. You're listening to a Downright Creepy original on the Crickets Podcast Network.